Joining us for this edition of Track Record on Share Radio is the man in charge of EQ Investors and the EQ Foundation as well. He has substantial expertise in both trading in the city, in investments, and in managing in the charitable sector too. He's John Spears. And I understand something of an amateur racing driver, which we may come on to on this edition as well. But John, a warm welcome to Track Record here on Share Radio.
Very pleased to be here. Thank you.
What kind of career had you very early on set your sights on?
Definitely a racing driver. You know, like most young boys, your father's your role model. And my father loved cars and he had raced them, so... that was my passion, and that's it. At those early period, that's what I wanted to do. But as time went on, that didn't seem quite so practical.
Is that what gave you an interest in engineering?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was surrounded with cars, with sports cars, and my father sort of trying to make them work properly. So I was fascinated with that, and. Meccano sets was the big present, and I loved building stuff there, and you know, designing my own stuff, and going a bit off piste.
I'm already getting the impression that you're a bit of a problem solver.
I think what you find from doing that sort of stuff, it's about you develop this incremental way of making improvements, and I think that is something I've carried on, maybe too much through the whole of my life, of constantly. Thinking, well, whatever we're doing today isn't going to be good enough for tomorrow. We need to find something better. Because when you're racing, that's it. Because if you don't get better, you know everyone else is, and you'll fall behind.
Is that a very healthy metaphor for the business world as well, those incremental gains?
Well, I think it is. It's a good motivator. It's not necessarily the best thing for peace of mind, because it means you're never sitting back and feeling satisfied.
There's always something else to explore. And we shall do that in the process of Track Record here on Share Radio. It's about the music as well as the CV chat, John. And first up on your list is The Beatles with Please, Please Me. Tell me why you've chosen this.
Well, back in those early 60s, trying to listen to rock music was very difficult. So you could either try to get some reception at night from Radio Luxembourg, or there were two programmes on what was then called the Light Programme, now Radio 2. Which was Saturday Club with Brian Matthews, and Sunday evening, Pick of the Pops with Alan Freeman. And so you had to listen to that. And I can still remember lying down in front of the radio in our living room, and suddenly this record came on, and I'd never heard anything like it before, and neither had anyone else. And you just sort of knew... This is I've got to have this, and this could be important. And of course, it just changed everything in music, and had a huge influence on my life. And it was the first record I ever bought. So and I still love it just as much to this day. That opening chord hits me just the same way.
Come on, please please me, oh yeah, like
Joining us for this edition of Track Record on Share Radio is John Spears, who's the CEO at EQ Investors, and we'll talk about that in the course of our conversation. Likewise, the EQ Foundation as well. Your business career is in investment over a couple of decades now. You started as an investment analyst in the city, straight from university. Was there any pause at all in your time at Cambridge before?
More or less. Under a student apprenticeship scheme to Atomic Energy Authority, which was great for paying me money all the way through university. But I'd realised by the time I left college that I didn't want to be an engineer. And that was a little bit awkward because I was on a five-year contract with the Atomic Energy Authority. But I eventually managed to get them to see that continuing to pay me money for not doing very much wasn't a great idea.
Why was there a shift in your thinking?
I just couldn't get interested in engineering, whereas I loved fiddling around with cars, you know, practical stuff. The theory of it just didn't do it for me. Whereas my father got me into investment. My father always used to be talking about the shares he was buying, and from an early age he got me some units in an M&G unit trust. And very quickly I started buying and selling shares as well. So I loved it. You know, I loved everything about it, and I still do. And so by the time I left college, that's where the direction I wanted to go in. But in 1972, 73, it was really hard to get into the market unless you already had experience. So I was struggling to find a position. And then I landed a job at the British Airways Pension Fund, who were about to expand their research team quite dramatically. And to be honest, I thought it was a bit of a dull backwater down at Hounslow. You know, I wanted to be in Throgmorton Street, in the centre of the action. But in the next 2 years, the stock market fell 75%. If I'd been in Throgmorton Street, well, I would have been out on the street. I wouldn't have been behind a desk because it devastated that industry. So I was in a relatively safe place during that really, really traumatic time.
Was it an area of business, an area of working life that you felt very much at home in immediately?
Yes and no. I mean, I think I probably, as a young man, was looking for the easy solutions a little too much, and in those days of fixed commissions, very long lunches, and limited working hours, there's a lot of temptation for a young boy.
Had you much experience of British Airways generally as a business, as an organisation?
No, we were completely separate part. Although a major perk was we got the cheap flights after a year. So on the 366th day that I'd worked there, I was on a VC-10 heading for Hong Kong.
That sounds like a terrific perk. And later you went on to work at a number of other stockbroking firms in the city. That's just the progression, I guess, of those early days going from one appointment to another.
Yeah, I was trying to find the right firm. You know, I think I moved too quickly from British Airways and went to a pretty small firm to work with a very charismatic boss, but probably not the best teacher for someone like me. And it took a few years before I ended up in a really high-quality broking firm, working in a great team. And that was superb. But by the time I'd been doing this for 10 years, I got a little bored with it, to be honest, because you know, you didn't feel you were really achieving anything. And in the early 80s, suddenly the whole political scene had changed with the Thatcher government. And there was a new spirit of optimism. Venture capital was beginning to get going. And that's what really captured my imagination. So I wanted to go off in that corporate finance direction and help to raise money for small companies. Thinking that would be pretty easy compared with the job I'd been doing before. Wow, I was so wrong.
We'll investigate why in a moment or two. But your next track record choice takes us back to The Doors with Light My Fire. Why this one, John?
This was the late 60s, and by then, you know, pop music had moved on a bit. We'd had Sgt. Pepper, lyrics had become a lot more interesting. And I always liked to sort of try and, I mean, whilst I love the Beatles and the Stones, I was always keen to sort of look for other stuff that my schoolmates maybe hadn't found, and I was browsing through the record selection in our department store, and suddenly saw the cover of this Doors album, and you know it looked really cool, and I took it and listened to it in the booth, and it knocked me out, and I bought every Doors record after that. They were my favourite band.
That it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
This is Track Record on Share Radio, and that's The Doors with Light My Fire. It's one of the choices of John Spears, who joins us on this edition of Track Record. Back in 2014, you might recall, he bought EQ Investors. Then came the EQ Foundation. And I know it's been an interesting few years over the last few years. But to jump back a couple of decades in your career, you said you got to the early 1980s when things were changing and corporate life certainly was changing. And just before we played The Doors, you said you had this vision of what your working life at the time was set to be, and it was very, very different indeed. How so?
Well, I moved from, you know, on a typical day working for maybe maximum 5 or 6 hours to working 18 hours, including weekends, because once you got into trying to help small companies, there was never any end to the problems you were encountering. So the learning curve was near vertical. But it was extraordinarily exciting, and I had no regrets whatsoever of moving over in that direction. And then, with the advent of Big Bang, the firm I was working for was acquired by what is now HSBC, and my role within it was clearly not looking very secure. And so I had the chance to go and create my own business for the first time, which is something that I'd always wanted to do. And I'd never kind of quite seen the opportunity, and now it was there.
Okay. The mid-1980s, just looking at your CV here, was a very interesting time for you anyway, when you married, when you had children. And presumably you were looking ahead to the next decade as well, thinking about where the next step in your career was likely to come from. Because it hasn't been all investments and stocks and working in the city. You've had time out where you've run what, nursing homes, a pub, karaoke business, is that true?
Yeah, you know, I think in the early days of Best Invest, then it was a very seasonal business, so we'd do probably 80% of our activity in the last 2 months of the tax year. So the rest of the year, you know, you had your time to try out other things, and I've always loved dabbling and trying, but I wouldn't say any of those have been any great success, and many of them have been complete disasters. But you always learn something from
Indeed. It. I might push a little more on the karaoke question in particular in a little while, but you talked about setting up Best Invest back in 1986, providing specialist research on tax shelter investments. And you described that as very seasonal, a lot of downtime the rest of the year. What prompted you to set up in this way?
Well, at that time, tax rates were very high. So income tax was 60%. And the government produced this scheme to let you save that if you invested in what they hoped were sort of high-risk, high-growth businesses. And so that was a very attractive proposition for a lot of well-paid people. And no one knew how to do it. So I managed to become established as the major independent analyst in that space and then broker. So I was in a fabulous position to meet a lot of really interesting people from all walks of life who were earning lots of money, and to look at lots of innovative business propositions.
You're listening to Track Record on Share Radio. John Spears is alongside on this edition. Your next choice, John, Derek and the Dominoes with Layla. Can you tell us why this is on your list?
I think this is one of the greatest rock tracks of all time. It's the vocals from Eric Clapton are passionate. His guitar playing's probably at his best, and it's a very moving love song. He was in love with Patty Harrison, the wife of George, and he thought that she was going to leave George for him, but she'd said no. Later, she did, but this song was written in the midst of all that anguish, and like, you know, all the great songs, it's coming out of a lot of pain. And Clapton was God at that time. You know, for anyone who liked rock with a blues emphasis, as I did, he was the man. And this, I still think, is his greatest ever track.
Track Record on Share Radio each week features those who sit at the pinnacle of their own businesses, their organisations, people who have a story to tell in the world of business and occasionally sport and politics and other areas too. This week we feature John Spears from EQ Investors, and on his Track Record list is Derek and the Dominoes with Layla. And we've talked a bit about the founding of Best Invest and the subsequent change in business direction in the early 1990s. And we're talking here about a business that by the end of the 1990s, at the turn of the century, was acquiring more staff, was arguably going in a different direction. Was it expanding in the positive way that you wanted?
Yeah, I mean, it started to get going reasonably well around 97, 98. But I was frustrated that we were losing a lot of business to rivals who were undercutting us on price. They were offering less of a service, but consumers would come and sort of get the service from us and then go and transact round the corner, a bit like walking in a shop today and trying on a dress and then going buying it online. And so we decided to match these guys on price, even though that meant basically losing all of our profits initially, counting on getting a big increase in volume. And it came at the same time as there was an enormous increase in the amount of investment activity by the public. So that we're talking now 99, 2000, the dot-com boom. And so we went from a business with assets under management of about 200 million and 14 staff. In 3 years, we went to 1.2 billion and 42 staff. So my job was sort of mainly about hiring more office space and buying more desks and computers and wiring them all up to work properly. It was the most exciting period of my business life, without any doubt at all.
And then came the acquisition of SMA back in 2003, which again doubled your staff numbers, more computers, more desk space, more floor space.
Yeah, and that partly came because, you know, organic growth had become really difficult. So in the wake of the dot-com bust, people weren't investing anything like as much anymore. Stock market had become tainted. And, of course, that's carried on, really, for a lot of that generation ever since. So we had to look elsewhere. And I'd known the founder of SMA, Peter Howland, for over 10 years. And we, you know, we shared sort of common ethics around the right way of doing business. And he had a fantastic client list and a good business, but they lacked the investment expertise that we had at Best Invest. And so it was a good combination because we could suddenly give his clients what they were missing. And the combined business was worth a lot more than the sum of the parts.
And suddenly you're in charge of what, 80, 90 members of staff, whereas just a few years before it had been in single figures.
Yeah. Plus there were another sort of 15 or so down in another business down in Kent, and we carried on growing. So it started getting up into well over 100. And businesses change, you know, with a combination of having a big acquisition with a different culture, and a lot of extra people, it's no longer the same entity. The values are getting diluted, and it was less fun. You know, it was a great deal financially, but it was no longer quite the business that I'd founded.
This is Track Record on Share Radio with John Spears alongside. You later sold to 3i, and we'll come on to talk about that, which of course gave you the opportunity to set up the Family Foundation that we'll get you talking about in a moment. Back on the music, Neil Diamond's Pretty Amazing. Grace is next on your list, John. Tell me about this.
Yeah, I'd liked Neil's songs from the 60s, and then he'd sort of disappeared, at least from my vision. Then I heard this in 2008, and it was just at the time I was starting a relationship with the lady who's been the partner of my life ever since. And I sent her a link to this because I found the words of it very, very moving. And it, fortunately, it struck the right chord with her. So I'll always be thinking of her when I hear it.
Pretty amazing grace is what you showed me. Pretty amazing grace is who you are. I was an empty vessel. You filled me up inside. And with amazing grace restored my pride. Pretty amazing grace is how you saved me. And with amazing grace reclaimed my heart. Love in the midst of chaos, calm in the heat of war, showed with amazing grace what love was for. You forgave my insensitivity my attempt to then mislead you. You stood beside a wretch like me. Your pretty amazing grace was all I needed.
Neil Diamond's Pretty Amazing Grace. This is Track Record on Share Radio. The music and the CV chat come from John Spears from EQ Investors, although that's not the only company name that you've been associated with over the years. Of course, we've been talking about Best Invest, and it's remarkable growth during the early years of the early 2000s. You sold it on in 2007 to 3i, gave up your involvement, and this gave you the opportunity to set up the Spears Family Foundation. Was that always something you were working towards? You talk there about as Best Invest got bigger, that values were being diluted. In many ways, it's hard to keep a handle on the whole company when it's just expanding all the time. Did you always want to do something that was very different? Was there always a streak of altruism about you?
Yeah, I think I've always known I've been extraordinarily lucky in my life. And, growing up at a time when, for me, education was free, even at the best university in the world, and getting a job wasn't at all difficult. Property, whilst it seemed a bit expensive, it was a bargain compared with today. And investment returns have generally been very good. So, I knew there were a lot of other people had been far less fortunate than me, and it wasn't their fault. So I felt a desire to try to help them, but I knew nothing really about how to go about it, and the more I looked at the charitable sector, the more confused I got. You cannot analyse it in the same way as you can the commercial world. So I went to get some professional help around finding some good causes for me, and that was a good start.
And which good causes at the time were closest to your heart?
The things that came out, I think, were particularly, as with many people, around children, child abuse, and early intervention. And I think this was the thing that really captured my imagination. The more I found out about it, that if we can get involved in helping someone very, very early in their life, and in fact, the research shows it's the first 1,000 days after conception is the critical period. Your brain will evolve in a different way from ours. And that will make it very difficult for you to fit in with society for the rest of your life. So if we can help to prevent that happening, the savings are just enormous. And I think that message is now becoming more and more widely shared. And it's beginning to see some action taken on it. We still need to see a lot more, though.
How much of the collected experience that you had at that point of running a business were you able to apply to setting up and running a foundation?
Almost none, I'd say. It's so different, the metrics that you have in
was
a business.
Was it somehow quite refreshing to be in uncharted territory?
Not really, no. No, I don't think anyone likes being particularly in uncharted territory. I'm driven by data. And in a business, you make sure you're seeing the data that tells you how things are doing. And that drives your decision making. And in the charitable sector, it's got a bit better, I think, in the last 10 years. But it's still very, very difficult to work out, am I actually really achieving anything with this? Great, I can see lots of people working and doing stuff. But actually, what are the outcomes from this? And without that data, you're driven much more by kind of gut instincts of does this person seem to be genuine and competent. I've always been, when I'm backing small businesses, my number one requirement is skillful management. The old saying, better to be backing a bad business with good management than the other way around, because good management will realise it's a bad business and yes, move it to a good business. So the same thing with a charity. I'm looking for strong, competent leadership. But even when you have that, it's really difficult to then see how successful is this. Every cause that you're involved with is different. And I think my thinking is continuing to evolve day by day. But what I'm trying to do now more and more is to see any money that I provide as being like a venture capital situation of trying to help some some new initiative and saying, I'll help to get it up to where it's got a track record. But if it achieves a track record and it's delivering results, I expect someone else to fund it after that, whether it's a local authority or central government or one of the major charities. You know, I'm there to put the risk money up, and I know some of those won't work, but that suits me.
Having said that you stepped down from any involvement at all with Best Invest, you were actually later asked by 3i to return as CEO to help keep everything moving and moving in the right direction during the financial crisis of 2008. Were you expecting to go back into that line of work? Was the call out of the blue, or was it rather more expected?
It was a bit of both. I mean, the terms on which I'd ended up selling Best Invest, whilst they were fantastic from a financial point of view, were sort of heartbreaking from an emotional point of view, because I'd not been allowed to continue to have any relationship with the business, and I was very quickly unhappy with some of the things that were happening there, and I knew a lot of the staff and clients weren't happy as well. So I had a strong emotional attachment to the business. So as the financial crisis evolved and they were suffering, there was part of me hankering after being able to do something about it. And then this opportunity came along, and it wasn't a pleasant experience, to be honest, because I wasn't used to being an employee and not being the controlling shareholder. And during that time, we had difficult negotiations with banks. And pretty slow decision making, and so I'd always intended it to be just a temporary arrangement until we got a new CEO appointed, and that's exactly what happened. I'm delighted we managed to stabilise the business and save all those jobs, and by the time I stopped doing that, I was glad to do that too.
Quite happy not to be there anymore. This is Track Record on Share Radio. Next up on your choices, John, Leonard Cohen's The Darkness, the late lamented Leonard Cohen indeed. Why is this on your list?
Like a lot of people of my generation, I'd listened to a lot of Leonard tracks in my university days and got very depressed listening to them. Then he'd gone off my radar a lot, but then when he started touring again and I had the huge pleasure of seeing one of those concerts, and this track particularly gets me because like most of us, I suffer from those dark moments at times, and Leonard's always been very good at trying to encapsulate it, and it's sort of helped me now. If I am moving towards the darkness, I think about this song because. And it brings a little bit of a smile to my face, which is always the best way of trying to combat it.
I'll cut the darkness. It was drinking from your cup. I'll cut the darkness. Drinking from your cup. I said, is this contagious? She said, just drink it up. I've got no future. I know my days are few. The present's not that pleasant. Just a lot of things to do. I thought the past would last me, but the darkness got that too. Young and it was summer.
Track Record on Share Radio. You're listening to the thoughts of John Spears, who joins us on this edition. He's from EQ Investors, CEO, also EQ Foundation. We'll come on and talk about that in a little while. Leonard Cohen is on his list with The Darkness. Now, we mentioned this early on in our conversation, your love of motorsport, which has persisted over the years. And until quite recently, you were still a fairly competitive driver, weren't you?
Still am. Last year I was in 35 races, and this year I'm hoping to be in slightly more than that. So it's a huge part of my life at the moment.
What do you get from it?
Enormous buzz. I'm a pretty competitive person, but there's something, if you can do something that absorbs every single molecule of your body, I do think that's a sort of kind of spiritual experience where it takes you out of all the other distractions that tend to buzz around all the time. When you're approaching a corner at high speed and know with one mistake that you can hurt yourself pretty badly, there's no scope for any of those other distractions. And when you're on form, you sense every part of your body working together to deliver the right result.
Is it too simplistic to say that whatever any of us do in life as a profession, no matter how absorbing that is, no matter how heavy on our time that is, we all need a thing that isn't that. And without sounding too selfish about it, isn't necessarily family commitments or anything else, something that's entirely yours.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think you have to have something that switches off all the other stuff. And then when you come back from it, you're refreshed. And
is this you making up for 18-hour days back in the 1980s?
I don't know. I mean, I do love it anyway. And but I spent a period playing croquet pretty seriously, and I got the same utter.
That's so interesting. I can't think of two sports that are directly opposite.
Yeah, I don't think I have a single friend who I've met from both of who does both those activities. there's a nil crossover.
And on croquet, let's talk you up here because your prowess was such that you played in two world championships.
I did. I didn't play very well, but it was a huge, huge honour and privilege to be able to do that.
Actually, having said that the two sports are very, very opposite, I think there's an argument to be made that there's still great skill involved. You do need a switched-on brain, of course, for both sports as well, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, croquet is incredibly tactical and very, very competitive. So I still love it. I really recommend it strongly to anyone to get out there and play it.
I liken it to snooker.
Yeah, yeah.
Snooker on the lawn. That's what my husband calls it.
But you're outside.
In a very different sphere. Are you intending to race throughout 2017 then?
Yep, absolutely. I've got a very big programme lined up.
John, let's hear your next track record choice. You've gone for Santana's Samba PT. Tell us why this is on your list.
Yeah, this is from my university years. So, back then there was a lot of stress around. There was the protests against the Vietnam War, power cuts from the sort of strife in the mining industry, and often in January and February in Cambridge the weather was just grim. So you come into the summer term and see some blue sky and maybe be out on the river punting, and Samba Pati just sort of, it brought a sense of total peacefulness of how life could be, and that's what it means to me.
Santana's Samba Party. You are listening to Track Record on Share Radio with John Spears, who's alongside from EQ Investors. And you gave us a tantalising glimpse of the fun that you had during your student years up at Clare College in Cambridge, where you were saying earlier on that you initially were there under a student apprenticeship, and you had to negotiate your way out of that one in order to then go into the city after university. How do you look back on your student years? With a great deal of fondness?
Absolutely. Although I wonder why I didn't make more of the opportunities that were there for meeting a wider spread of people. I think I got very involved with rowing, and rowing gave a lot back to me in terms of the benefits from getting a crew totally working together, and I've tried to apply a lot of that with my businesses. You know, there's nothing better than seeing a team starting to work as a team rather than a series of individuals. So that was a powerful early message, and established some wonderful lifelong friendships with people at that time. And I think some of that work ethos that you, as you get from any kind of competitive sport, that you've got to put the hours in on the training on those cold, dark days to have a chance of a result later on. And there's some good messages in there for me.
If you can be out on the cam at 7 a.m. on a February morning, then you're capable of a lot, I reckon. We've talked a lot about Best Invest, haven't we? Which was later sold
in 2014. Yes,
in 2014, and that was it. Your dealings with the business gone. But then came EQ Investors. Tell me about the story of your involvement here.
Yeah, well, after the sale of Best Invest, I've been a non-exec director there for several years, and I then felt a sense of emptiness, of not having any connection with a business in that sector, because I really love the sector. I love the investment aspect of it, but I also love the client aspect of how you can try to provide a better and better service to clients, and indeed meeting clients as well. So I felt there's a real gap in my life, and I considered going back, starting all over again, but I felt that would be a bad approach, both at this time in my life and given the way the industry is now. I think starting from zero is really tough. Mm. So I tentatively started looking around to see if any businesses might be for sale that fit the bill. And I had a lunch with the person who'd sold Best Invest for me, and unbelievably he'd just taken on a mandate for the business that I ended up buying. Which looked just a bad idea, really.
How quickly did you go from the lunch that gave you this idea, where this idea came to the table, through to actually buying and committing?
Well, negotiating, buying a business is never a quick job. But
it's always more than a few days.
It took about 6 months, I think.
Yeah, and then came EQ Foundation as well. Having set up the Spears Family Foundation, of course, by now you've much experience in this sector. But what was your reasoning behind founding the foundation?
Because I wanted to continue. I'd drawn an enormous amount of enjoyment from my charitable giving. You know, there's not much better in life actually than seeing somebody else clearly get some benefit as a result of some money you've given away, of money that wasn't going to ever do anything for you anyway. So I wanted to maintain that, and I wanted it to be another way of demonstrating that EQ, we were not in this business just to make money for ourselves. We had a wider perspective, and so having our own foundation and having our own staff involved in deciding who we're going to support, and indeed allowing our clients to come up with ideas as well, tied in with my vision of the type of business I really wanted to create.
And just a few years on from taking over EQ and setting up the foundation, how do you assess where you are now?
Like everything else I've done, I mean, it's taken longer. I'd say the first year or so, I was thinking, why is it not happening? And I had to keep reminding myself, you know, you've been here before.
And was that dynamic very different from having set up originally Best Invest by yourself? You describe sitting on the fourth floor with you and another colleague, thinking this is it, this is where we are now. Having gone through that process and built that up over a series of years to then taking on someone else's concern, a very different process indeed.
Yeah, you know, I think I'd liken it to using another sort of area that's that I'm keen on. It's buying an old car, and it looked to be just what you wanted, but by the time you've taken it home and opened the bonnet up and driven it a few times, you find there's really quite a lot you want to do with it to get it into the shape that you require. So it was just like that. A lot of good people there, very poor systems, and a lot missing. So we had to go and increase the overheads pretty dramatically to get the kind of service quality out. And so that put me into a really uncomfortable situation, because at Best Invest, we always made a profit. In 20 years of running it, we never lost any money. And at EQ, we started incurring losses because we had to increase the overheads dramatically. And whilst I'd known that was going to happen, because obviously we'd done our planning, there'd been a part of me thinking, well, but you don't lose money. It'll pick up quicker than you're expecting. Well, it didn't. It picked up slower than I expected. So we lost more money than I'd projected. And whilst that wasn't a problem from a financial point of view, I found it quite emotionally draining. But fortunately, we've now got through to the open lands of and things look great, and we're up 50% in the last year. So I think we're probably the fastest growing organic wealth manager in the country at the moment. And whilst we have no ambition to be the biggest at all, we're simply trying to be the best.
Arctic Monkeys next up on your list. Fluorescent Adolescent. John, why this?
Rock music needs to get reinvented every 10 or 15 years, and so I think the Arctics were one of the more recent examples of that, of coming up with a slightly different sound. I think I love this song. I think it's a bit sad, because it's fundamentally about a lady who isn't getting the same kicks out of a relationship that she used to. And I think that's an interesting sort of concept. We all know that tends to happen, but actually, once the initial excitement goes and you get to a period of comfort, there can be a lot of good stuff around that as well. But I love the lyrics. I love the whole sound.
Now you only get it in your nightdress. Discarded all the naughty nights for niceness. Landed in a very common crisis. Everything's in order in a black hole. Nothing seems to fit to the past though. That bloody memory's like an El Tabasco. Remember when you used to be a rascal? Oh, the boys are slag. The best you ever had. The best you ever had is just a mess. Flicking through a little book of sex tips. Remember when the bars were all electric? And now when she told she's gonna get it, I'm guessing that she'd rather just forget it. Clinging to not getting sentimental. Said she wasn't going, but she went still. Like a gentleman to be gentle. Was it a mecha double or a betting pencil? Oh, the boys are slag.
Arctic Monkeys, Fluorescent Adolescent. The CEO at EQ Investors is alongside on this edition of Track Record on Share Radio. He's John Spires. You talked there of being in a place now where you can let other people take more control than perhaps you would have let them in the past at EQ?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So what lies in the immediate future of EQ then?
I think hopefully, very exciting future, and lots of stuff on our development plan to keep making the service better and better. I think that job never ends. I think particularly where we feel there's our sector is still very bad at communicating with people. So real people are thinking in terms of, how can I repay my mortgage? You know, what's my life going to look like later on? And we tend to go along and say, you've made 8.3% last year, and we've beaten the benchmark by 1.3%, and talk in terms that really mean nothing to most people and aren't really very relevant for what most people need. So so I think there's still a big piece of work to be done to try to bring all this together, and especially to bring in Generation X, Generation Y, who are used to dealing with organisations in a very different way, and the traditional style of sitting down once or twice a year with an advisor who will bamboozle you with terms that you don't really understand isn't how they want to do business, and we need to evolve to fully allow for that.
And personally, are there things left that you would like to yet achieve, John?
Yeah, lots. I think particularly in the charitable area, you know, I'm fascinated with how some of the good aspects of the corporate world don't work there. There are so many tremendous small organisations out there doing fantastic work. And if we can distill the essence of their operations and make that available for other people to set it up with an overall infrastructure to control that, I think we can really achieve something big.
John Spears, it's been a real privilege and a pleasure to have had you join us on Track Record. Thank you for sharing your story and the music as well. Last on the list is Rag & Bone Man's Human. Tell us why you've opted to choose this.
Well, this is the most recent track, and it's just as a show. I'm not totally stuck in the past. I love his voice. I think there's so much emotion coming through in that. It just, makes my back tingle when I hear it. And I think these words are really very important. You know, I'm only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. I think this is a big message. It has much wider implications. We shouldn't blame ourselves too much for a lot of stuff that goes on, or particularly blame other people. We're just doing our best. And now and again, we get things wrong. And we should just move on and live life.
John Spears, thank you for joining us on Track Record.
Sorry we didn't get to the karaoke, but that's probably just as well.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Take a look in the mirror, what do you see? You see it clearer, or are you deceived in what you believe? 'Cause I'm only human after all, and you're only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Some people got the real problems. Some people lot of love. Some people think I can solve them.
Track Record with Sue Dugan.